Hey, mujeres, bienvenidas a Courageous Mujer Podcast. I am your host, Gladys Godinez, and I am here to support, embrace, and celebrate all Latinas in the heartland. It is our time to share our stories, break some barriers, and glass ceilings while we're at it. Like the song says, let's get loud. Just a reminder, Courageous Mujer Podcast is brought to you by United by Culture here in Lexington, Nebraska. United by Culture celebrates our differences and lives by the saying, many nations, una familia. Feel free to follow United by Culture Council on Facebook and Instagram. Welcome, mujeres. Bienvenidas. I am your host here at Courageous Mujer Podcast. My name is Gladys Godinez, and today I have my sister, Rose, here joining me as my first official guest. Welcome, Rose.
Thank you.
I just want to share a little bit about my sister. She is a daughter of immigrants who are also happen to be my parents. She's first generation high school, college, and law school graduate. She graduated from Lexington High School, Creighton University, and St. Louis University of Law. She's currently a civil rights attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, also known as the ACLU of Nebraska, leading cases on students' rights, immigrants' rights, and racial justice. And then prior to joining the ACLU of Nebraska, Rose also practiced immigration law at the Immigrant Legal Center. But Rose, you have so much more going on. I'm so excited to talk to you. Welcome, sister.
OMG, I'm your first guest.
Yes, I'm so excited for you to be here.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining me. As you know, I started this new adventure, and I'm excited to introduce so many people like us that are doing so many great things in the state of Nebraska. So here we go. Just to get us started, what is something exciting that has happened to you within the last week or so?
Gosh, I'm not like the most exciting person. I was really thinking about it. Let me see. I did start cooking. You know, I think you know this sort of, but I signed up for the subscription box. I won't drop it though, because you should get a promo.
You should totally get to get sponsorship. Agreed. Yeah. Don't do that to them yet.
No. But if you're listening, sponsor my podcast. Okay. So I'm doing the subscription box and I get to cook every day. So most people probably think that we cook, but we like don't cook at all. Like I don't cook whatsoever. All I know how to do is sandwiches and like chicken nuggets.
But your breakfast sandwiches are bomb. So let's go ahead and give you some props.
Learn that from my older sister's skills. So I think that's the most exciting thing, honestly, is learning how to cook. And it's not like subscribing for life, but learning those like little skills, like how to use the oven, except for like not using it just for storing pans and pots. You know what I mean? Like you can move the racks and you can broil and then bake. Like there's differences. I've learned so much.
Well, I'm intrigued. I want to know more about broiling and baking. So we may have to have a conversation about broiling and baking. What is the difference? Porque I just know there are two different buttons on the stove.
Same. I also didn't know there was a temperature thing. Like, okay, for broiling, apparently, this is so off topic. But for broiling, you don't need a temperature thing. It's already automatic. But for baking, you do. It was so confusing at the beginning. But yeah, that's my exciting tip. Oh, learning how to cook during a pandemic. Yes. Eating less out. Yes, for health.
Courageous Mujer Cooking Podcast episode. I'm so in. We're going to have to do it.
Just like a step-by-step instructional video. It's basically me just following instructions because I can't cook on the whim. But mom can. You know how grandma could just like whip something out of nowhere?
Yeah. Yeah, but I also remember, you know, her kicking me out because I couldn't cook it like she cooked it. Because she's like, no, mija, I got these scrambled eggs. And I'm like, but I can scramble some eggs. And she's like, no, mija, no te preocupes. And I'm just like, okay, bye, grandma, gracias. And she always had our favorite meals ready. So, grandma.
We ate well.
Yes,
we just didn't learn how to cook.
But mom also said, do you remember mom said, I didn't raise you to cook.
True.
Yes. She said she didn't raise us to cook. So here we are.
That's right.
Yeah.
These are brain. Well, you use your brain for cooking too, though. But I get what you're saying.
Yes, yes. No negativity to chefs or anybody in this room. You know, like, yes. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying what my mom said.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to be politically correct. This is hard.
I know. This is hard.
All right. So just to clarify, because I want to make a statement and continue to make a statement with Courageous Mujer Podcast, is we want to be welcoming to everybody, regardless of gender, race, you know, sexual orientation. So can you break down your ethnic identity, your pronouns?
That's so good, sister. I identify as Latina. And wait, what else? Just, oh, my pronouns.
Yeah.
She, her, ellas.
I think that is a word. I agree. With the plural, yeah. Ella, yeah.
Yeah.
Ellas.
I think that's it. Not her pronouns.
Yes. Well, thank you for identifying yourself and also sharing your pronouns with us. Let's talk a little bit about you, your youth, if you're willing to share a little bit about what happened when you were young, when you're a baby, where you grew up, so on and so forth. Can you share a little bit about little Rosangela or Rose?
Little Rose. What's to say that you don't know? You like saw me in diapers.
But not everybody did, so.
That's, I mean, no. That's good. That would be a crime.
Oh my gosh.
And I turn everything legal. Okay, let's see. Talk about my childhood. Okay, well, first of all, we have a pretty big family. I'm fourth out of five. There's still a little brother. And I have used my next oldest sister, and then I have two older brothers. So I was kind of a middle child along with you, but I would say you took the rebel child title. I would say I learned from your mistakes. You're welcome. How much of that do you want on a podcast? I'm just kidding. Okay, so I grew up and being number four, but there's quite a bit of a gap between all of us that I don't think people realize because they always think we're twins.
Thank you, by the way, to all of those people. I appreciate them.
No, like, hello, there's a gap.
It is a large gap, but it's my skincare. I mean, you know, like mom sells Mary Kay. So
that's
Mary
right. Kay,
that's what's up.
Shout out Mary Kay.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I use. then smile. Okay, where was I? There's quite a bit of a gap. So you three, I think the older ones grew up together quite a bit. And then 8 years later was when I came. Mm-hmm. So I mostly grew up with you, I would think, like as my closest, well, not only sister, but my closest sibling. So I looked up to you and I followed you around everywhere. And then 8 years later, another little brother came. So yeah, that was me growing up. I was an older sister to a little guy and a younger sister to you.
Mm-hmm. And then just share a little bit about where you were born and coming to Nebraska. Can you talk a little bit about what our experience was? You were younger than I was when we moved to Nebraska. Did you feel it? Did you remember it?
I don't remember anything. I only remember... My first memory of Lexington is when I went to pre-kindergarten and I wouldn't stop crying. So my mom had to volunteer at the pre-K because I wouldn't stop crying. And so then she just stayed with me the entire year crying. And then they graduated me, I think, just so I wouldn't keep crying. That was my first memory of Lexington, but I don't remember California at all. Like everything I know is because of what you guys have told me. Like I'm sure you remember exactly how and when it is that they decided to come here. I only know it's because partly because of the LA riots and partly because of the poverty we were experiencing at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you were so little. I remember when we moved here, it was via train. And then I had, you know, I took care of you. You were all over with me. I was carrying you around the train and making sure that we got food. And my mom was always like, ve, mija, ve agarrarnos lunch. And I'm like, okay. So then I would take you with me and we would go get lunch and then we would come back. So I do remember that. But it was, that train ride was, I don't even know how long it was. It was a long
train ride. Wasn't everyone sick on that train ride?
Other than me, yes. Y luego after, I was sick because of the motion sickness. And it was the middle of winter, y no tenían los coats, so it was not fun either. But we made it. We made it home to dad because dad came here first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good. Then what do you remember about middle school, high school? Tell us a little bit about that. What was your experience growing up in rural Nebraska in middle school and high school?
Let's see. Middle school and high school. I think middle school was honestly a huge turning point in my life because I wasn't previously, I guess I always have been, let me back. So I always have been that kind of person that wants that diploma. I think you remember this, like the full attendance record. Like I thrive off of like those little rewards. And I think I knew that, but I didn't do it in school. Like I didn't dedicate it to homework before middle school. But then in middle school, I hung out with a not so good crew. And that was popular in middle school kind at the time. And they wanted me to start stealing stuff when I was like, I think this was like sixth or seventh grade. And it's crazy because you don't think about this when you're a middle school student. You don't think about how your parents have already implemented, have like planted the seed of what's right and wrong. Like you have a conscience. And I didn't think it was a big deal at the time, but like they asked me to start stealing stuff. I said I wouldn't do it. I lost a ton of friends because of that. I became like ousted. At the cafeteria, I would be like eating by myself with a book. Like I didn't have that many friends anymore. But then I met one of my best friends. Well, shout out, which is Nancy and has been my friend since middle school. And we nerded out together because that's all we knew how to do was like read books and chill. And then that was what completely changed my course. I think if I would have stayed with the group that I was hanging out with before, I don't think I'd be here. And that wasn't even a decision that like my parents made for me. That wasn't a decision that you guys made for me. That was really something that I did myself at a really young age, which I think is shocking, but really cool. Yeah. I'm proud of little Rose.
Yes, heck yes, because I didn't know this story before this conversation. And I didn't know that's how you met Nancy. And Nancy's such a powerhouse person. She has such a great heart. I mean, it just makes sense now, why you two come together so well. So that's really cool. Shout out to Nancy. We see you and we love you.
Yes, bestie.
Yes. Well, that's really cool. So you went through middle school, you overcame that, and then you found yourself a little bit in high school then, do you think, with Nancy and understanding that, you know, your values that you already had?
I think so. I think it was the values and morals that I learned, you know, from you guys and from our parents. And the friends, you really, I mean, that's where I think you really learn you are who you surround yourself with. And that's who Nancy was to me, like, as my best friend, a good person to hang out with. Mm-hmm. But also, I think in high school, what changed it, like, I went from, like, nerd level 2 to, like, nerd level 500 was when I met Mrs. Henry. And she's a teacher at the high school who noticed that I was in English class, but like basic English class, I wasn't in honors classes. And she said, you have, I don't know what paper I wrote, but she said, you have a lot of potential. Why don't you sign up for an honors class? I'm like, I don't even know what an honors class is. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you talking about? And she's like, no, it's like an upper level class. It prepares you for college. And I was like, I mean, okay, I'll give it a shot. And so then I signed up for that. Then I realized, like, I think she opened the door for like seeing the potential I had. Not that my parents and that my family didn't see it, but they didn't see the academic side of what I could do. And she saw that every day. So after that, I signed up for a bunch of honors classes and then ramped up that GPA getting ready for college.
Yes, yes. And I do remember all of the certificates, porque that's what I think that's what our parents noticed is the certificates, those awards, and then getting those at home and then framing them all over the house. And then yeah. Rosangela, look, you have another one, you know, and they were so proud of all
they
of
are.
Us. Yes, they were always framing them all over the place. So that's really cool. Mrs. Henry, shout out to Mrs. Henry for seeing the potential in Little Rose. And look at her now.
I know. I think she's still teaching. Shout out to all those teachers, man. Mm-hmm. I think because of them, of the good ones, because there's also, I mean, you have story. I remember the story that you have, like the opposite of that. Someone not believing in you and you having to overcome that. And I think that's worse. I didn't necessarily have to go through that in high school, but the teachers that do believe in you and do believe in kids and push them and just make them see the potential that they have is just invaluable.
I agree. Well, let's level up a little bit. You went to college and not only one, but two, because you have your law degree. So do you want to share a little bit about Creighton University, your experience there? And let's talk a little bit about that. I remember some experiences there, but I also remember, you know, you growing so much in there. So I'm ready for it. Dime el chisme.
Ooh, Creighton. Okay, so first, I didn't know Creighton existed. Did you?
I don't remember.
I didn't know Creighton existed. I think the only reason I applied, so everybody knows Creighton is in the Midwest, but it's like one of the top schools in the state. It's a private college, so it's super expensive. So I don't even know why I applied.
I know why you applied. You said, no quiero estar in the same school as Carlos, Caesar, and Gladys, which is UNK, the University of Nebraska and Kearney. And I was like, that's fine. Do you? Let's figure out where you're headed. So let's be real.
That's true. I completely forgot about that. Yeah. I did want to blaze my own path. So yes. I think one thing I guess we skipped over is this entire time I have siblings that are like amazing at everything. Like they are like big in the community. They're like loud and proud. Like, of course, they're cool. And then when you're like the fourth, it's like, I mean, what are you bringing to the table? So, like it was a lot of pressure. To be honest. And I think that's why I was like, oh, I need to shake off this pressure and go set like my own path. Mm-hmm. And so then I did say that I was really adamant about that, not going to UNK.
Yes. And that's
nothing against UNK.
Right. So. We have nothing against UNK. I mean, there's some things that we can talk about, but it's not in this episode.
True.
Y luego, just being called Little Gladys, you know, because a lot of the time you were identified as my little sister. And I know that wasn't, it was with love, pero no era what you wanted. You know, like you were your own person and you are your own person. Therefore, you're setting your own path. And in Creighton, which I mean, hello.
I mean, it's no Columbia. Fast forward to Jonathan, but
I know, no big deal.
You know, we're all moving. Okay. So I applied to Creighton. I didn't know where it was, but I didn't know where it was. I knew where it was. I didn't know who it was. And then I got in. I got this random letter. Not random, but I got accepted, but a letter with like basically saying I won $250,000.
Yeah.
Which was insane. I had never thought of that much money. Like our family would never be able to afford that education. So yeah, that was extremely shocking. And then I guess like the path was set. It was like, you're going to Creighton. I mean, who turns down 250 grand?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Not me. So I went, and it's called the Diversity Scholarship for anybody who's listening and should apply. I think it still exists. It pays now, I think, 75% of your tuition, but anyway. So I got to Creighton and I was really, really excited. I remember you, grandma, my parents went to go drop me off. I had a roommate. I, you know, for the life of me, I don't remember her name. I think I blocked it out.
I think that's a good thing.
Probably, but I don't, like, I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I don't remember her name.
You don't?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was not a good person. So I ended up moving in all like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to nerd out at Creighton. And I move in with a roommate who's a wera, a white girl. And after a while, I start noticing that she doesn't, first of all, she doesn't like hang out with, I saw a lot of roommates like hang out with each mm-hmm. other, like go to lunch and stuff. I was like, I would offer and she wouldn't want to. And then after a while, she would start. So we shared a TV, but I watched my Novena. You know how I love Novena.
Yes. Like, yes.
At least one I have to watch. I say it's because I just need to keep up with my Spanish.
Right. Wink, wink. That's the only reason why we watch telenovelas. Not that we weren't raised on them. Not that we didn't make them a special right. time after las noticias. Not that we didn't we didn't watch and make sure that we knew whose boyfriend was whose the next day.
Right. Oh my gosh, yes. And then you find out, oh my God, they're family.
Like, oh, son gemelos, you know? Oh, what? I didn't see this coming.
The evil twin comes.
Yes. Oh my.
Oh my gosh, yes. They're so good.
Yes.
That's why we're so dramatic.
Yo, no. What?
Yeah. It's that romance. Mm-hmm. So I would watch those in my dorm. And then I would listen to Spanish music because I grew up listening to Spanish music. We grew up in LEC. So I grew up in a very diverse town, a very diverse student body, and really hadn't encountered racism towards me, more so towards my parents. And I would have to be defensive about it. Mm-hmm. But it was never at me. And this was the first time I went through it. She started spreading rumors about me throughout the floor, and everybody on the floor stopped talking to me or would walk by the dorm and like leave trash in the room. Like, it was a horrible, horrible time. And I was already like crying every day, missing my family, mm-hmm. on top of that, having to go through this and school. So eventually, I think I cried myself out so much that I just called you guys and I was like, I wanna go home. And I think I told you, you were like, you want me to go pick you up. And at that point I was like, yeah, like I wanna go home. I was willing. It's so sad looking back at it now because I had worked so hard mm-hmm. to get that money, to get that scholarship, to get into the school. And I was going to give it all up because of this one chick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but we're not set up in a way that we're prepared for those actions. Like you said, first, you're homesick. Then you're trying to figure out Creighton University, something that you didn't know before. And then in addition to, you have this person just completely ruining your experience. So,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead and continue.
No. It's true. So then I called you. You made some moves behind, like, I didn't know the moves you made. You're going to have to tell me what moves you made. All I know is somehow eventually Yolanda found out. And people here who listen to this know who Yolanda is.
You better know. I mean, if you don't know, you need to know.
Yeah, Yolanda Nuncio. I mean, come on, everybody has to know who she is. And she made some other moves that eventually got to Ricardo Ariza, another huge mentor of mine at Creighton, who was the director of multicultural affairs there, and should still be, but I'm mad at Creighton for that. Anyway, so he worked some of his magic, because in the meantime, I was going through all this. I was talking to the RA, I was talking to the residence director. They were like, oh, maybe you can talk it out. And I'm like, you can't talk out racism. Like, right. While you're living through it, it was already too much. And I was like, no, I just want to go. I just want to move out. Like, give me a room by myself. I don't care. And Ricardo found out through the chain that you started. And I was able to move out to another dorm room. And that's where I met one of my actual, well, that we don't talk that much anymore, but one of my really good friends. Mm-hmm. And also a wera. I felt like after that experience, I was like, all weras are mean. I was like, I can't be friends with any anymore. But then I through her, I learned not everybody's that way. And she also came from a working class. I mean, that's where I gained like 20 pounds because she worked at Arby's and fed me that every day. So it all ended up okay. But I do think it was a rough start that didn't need to be that way. Mm-hmm. But well, I learned to reach out for help, you know?
Yes. Yes. And it was one, I remember your friend, the second roommate, and all of your stories. They were hilarious. Porque me llamabas and you would be like, Gladys, you wouldn't believe what we just did, you know? And it was the, I'm not going to say them, because some of them were not on the lawful side. But yeah, so you would call and I'd be like, I would be so happy. Porque primero she fed you, you know, even though I know you get some pounds, but she fed you. And then she treated you so nicely and, you know, just was a real homie, a real friend for you. So I was so grateful for her. But yeah, so there's this network of Latino leaders throughout the state. And I try to stay within that network. I think it's so powerful that we know each other throughout the state. I think it's such a good thing to have. So at that time, I knew Yolanda, and I knew Yolanda had connections. You know, she's been an activist. She has been a leader, a trailblazer aquí in the state of Nebraska and central Nebraska. So I already knew she knew something, you know, like I already knew she could help me out. So I called Yolanda and I was like, this is what's happening. And she's like, no te preocupes, Gladys, we're going to figure this out. And then she called Ricardo. And then I don't know if I don't think I talked to Ricardo. I met Ricardo after the fact, but then she called Ricardo, and then Ricardo figured out something for you to be able to move in somewhere else, which I remember the staff at Creighton didn't want you to move out. I remember you saying, they don't want me to move out. I don't know what to do. And I'm just like, well, we got to figure this out. So it was my red cell phone that I had on my side pocket on all of my Latino leaders, you know, and just being there to save the day. Because sometimes we need each other, and they really helped me out that time. So I'm very appreciative of my red of superheroes.
Yes. Thank you. Because of you, I kept going to the university. I think I would have dropped out. So many thank yous to you and to Yolanda and Ricardo, and so many Latino leaders that are there for you. Just, I think it's so important to have that network and to know you can reach out and someone will help in some way.
Yes. Agreed. Well, good. Then we graduate Creighton. We have a party. And then you decide to go to law school.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. That was a whole decision in itself. So, you know, I didn't always want to become an attorney. There are so many careers that I would be.
And you have two different degrees. Tell them your bachelor's.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So that one I did choose. Well, I chose all of them. That one was management informational systems and information technology. To tell you how big of a nerd I am. If you need your computer fixed, call me. Yeah. So those were my double majors. And then I didn't want to be a lawyer, I don't think. So the whole story behind me wanting to be a lawyer is a little weird. I don't know if this will make it into the podcast. I don't know if you know why I became a lawyer.
I don't know if I know, other than my parents wanted a lawyer, an attorney, and somebody else in the family.
It wasn't even that. Like, I'm going to make it really basic. So you remember that one time you went with me because we met with an advisor at Creighton. And I was like, oh, how do you get on the soccer team? How do you get on the soccer team? And you were like, you should ask legitimate questions of how you get in here. And I'm like, oh, okay. When should I graduate in? And the guy just told me, well, what do you want to be? And I'm like, I want to be, at the time, I want to be an FBI agent.
Yes.
And then the guy was like, okay. And I don't even remember who this guy is, but he defined my entire career. Because he said, okay, well, if you want to be an FBI agent, you have to follow the money. So you should graduate in business. I'm like, okay. And then he's like, and then you should go to law school, because then you can learn the law side of things. I'm like, makes perfect sense to me.
Yes, now I hear it. It makes sense.
So that's how I ended up here. I think that's technically how I ended up. And Creighton had a really cool 3-3 program where you can do 3 years of undergrad, 3 years of law school, which I didn't do because I didn't get into law school my third year of undergrad. Getting all serious now. It was really hard to get in. So you have to take the LSAT to get into law school, kind of like the ACT, but the ACT for law school. And I struggled so much with these standardized tests. Like, I could have amazing grades in undergrad, but I couldn't get a score on this test to get me into any kind of school. And it was frustrating me. I took it twice. And then I said, you know what? Law school is not for me. I'll just graduate with, I sound like I just give up right away. I don't give up right away, but it was just hard because I was studying a lot and I wasn't getting anywhere. And these standardized tests, if you look back into it, mm-hmm. it's like systemic racism, because we don't thrive as Latinos or Black people or anybody that's really a person of color, don't thrive in standardized testing. And they know that and yet still use them. Although some law schools are now taking away the LSAT requirement, so I'm glad.
Yay.
Yeah, so I took it twice, didn't get a good grade. And then I was like, you know what, Mom? I'm just going to get a job in whatever I can get in business and IT and just do that. You know, I'm already have a good degree. I'm not paying for any of it. I'm not in debt. And my mom was like, just do it one more time. Mm-hmm. And like, we were so broke at the time. You know, like my grandma at the time had Alzheimer's. We were dealing with that at home. And the test cost like $250 or something every time to take it. So I had already spent nearly $500,000. To me, it felt like $500,000.
Yeah, so we didn't have it. 500,000 pennies, honey.
It was $500,000 to yes. go into this. That'd be so much. I mean, that is what it felt like. True.
Yeah.
Okay, so it costed a lot. My mom was like, do it, just do it one more time. And I'm like, no, Mom, it's too much. She's like, just one more. Just promise me you'll do it one more time. And then if you don't get a high enough score, then okay, do the next best thing. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And so then I signed up for another test. I got a passing score on that third time. It's like, Mama knows, man. listen to your mom.
Yes. Well, and you know, we're lucky and blessed to have mom, you know, to have that support system, but it is our support system that pushes us through the hardest times at times. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you have to have so much courage to try, but you need that extra oomph to get over, you know? So then I got the score. I got accepted to Creighton, but they had turned me down, and I'm very, what do you call that? Where you're like spiteful? No, I don't know. But I just didn't want to go there because they had already turned me down. So then I went to SLU, which is the sister school to Creighton. And yeah, that's how I got to law school in St. Louis University.
Yes. And then fast forward and you graduate and we throw a party. Woo!
Another fast forward.
You just love it.
Yes.
Is there anything you want to share about your law school experience? Because, you know, honestly, I am skipping forward, but it doesn't matter. I think it is important for us to talk about those experiences that have happened both in your bachelor's and law school degree that may, you know, some other Latinas within the school systems may feel. Anything that you can share a little bit about?
Law school? There aren't that many of us. So law school is very, very white, more so than undergrad. So I was one of three Latinos in the class, and there was only one other Black man, person of color, as part of our class. So it lacks so much diversity. And this was in St. Louis, which is way more diverse than, right, than here. So that's why I think at that point in time, it's so important to network, and it feels so awkward. I know I'm like, at the time I was super, super shy. So it was really hard for me to do like small talk and like, oh, here's my business card. Here's your business card. Stay in touch. We should do coffee sometime. All that. I'm just like, I didn't want to do it. But that's what ended up helping me, like get clerkships, get internships. And those are all the goal. Like my one tip for anybody going to law school is you want to get, if you're, I mean, depending on your goal, but usually people's goal is to get into a big firm. And if that's your goal, or to get into a nonprofit job, like the one I have, you need to apply to those internships quick and get those on-campus interviews and network as much as you can, because it really is the people you know, unfortunately, rather than what you know. So yeah, that would be my tip.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Well, we have fast forwarded. We are now current in career land, and you have started your career. How has your career evolved? You know, you were in St. Louis, y luego qué? You know, like you graduated, now what?
Yeah. So during graduation, so law school, I focused on business law. Like, my life, entire life, I feel like doesn't make much sense unless you hear this story. But because, oh, FBI agent ended up law school. But also, the fact that I ended up coming back to Nebraska was because at the time, someone really close to us was going through deportation proceedings and had already been scammed by immigration attorneys once or twice before. And I was sick and tired of not knowing what we could or could not do. And at the time, also like coincidence, Justice for Our Neighbors, which is now Immigrant Legal Center, had a job opening for an immigration attorney in Lexington, Nebraska. I mean, the coincidences of coincidence.
Right.
So I didn't want the job, but I knew I wanted to, I didn't want the job first because my whole trajectory had been business law and was now towards corporate law and going towards that area. But it completely shifted when I saw someone I loved in like danger of being deported. And so at that time, all my priorities changed. And I applied to the job. I got it. And I worked at Immigrant Legal Center for a couple of years as kind of a guinea pig attorney. So now they have a lot of offices all around the state, which is so cool. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was the only one that had an office west of Omaha. So I had a lot of cases. And I got to work at in my hometown, give back a little bit of what I got, which I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like a full circle type thing. And then I wanted to expand beyond just immigration law. I wanted to do more. I wanted to do policy as well. So I applied to a position at the ACLU where I am now.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about job searching, because we had a conversation. We've had conversations about career paths y todo eso and how we do it in job searching. I want to bring it up because I think I have met at least 10 people that have done this. So let's talk a little bit about it. In regards to our names, sometimes we get discriminated against just because people see our name on a resume, but we have exactly the same amount of, credibility. We have the same amount of experience, skill set, pero we don't get the jobs. Mm-hmm. So your full name is Rosangela, and we can go into a whole story about Rosangela and how beautiful the name is, but how upset you are because you don't have a middle name.
It's true.
But let's not go into that one. Let's go into job searching and then your name being Rosangela and then people maybe not being able to say it, but also on your resume. We had a conversation. Do you want to share about that experience?
Yes. Yeah. So my name. Okay. So before I go into this conversation, I am mad that I don't have a middle name, but also I think it's important that although my mom says it's Angela, but I'm like, then my first name would be Ross, which wouldn't make any sense. Anyway,
She's trying to make you feel better. Yeah.
I know. And she's like, it's so long. And then I tell her Jonathan has, I don't know how many letters and mine has 9 letters and you still gave him a middle name. Anyway, can you tell I'm salty about it?
No.
Okay. So on the name thing, I think there's so much shaming, first of all, of people who go by another name. And I think that's wrong because we didn't get to choose our name. And not to say that I don't love Rosangela. I think it's a beautiful name. But I didn't choose it. And nobody gets to choose their name. Like, we just love it because either it comes from our parents or the story behind it. But at the end of the day, we should be able to choose what it is we want to be called. And then as to why I changed, I didn't change it, my legal name. That would be a hassle. Like, changing your name.
Yeah, no, you have not changed it legally. No.
It's so much work.
Yes.
But why I shortened it, well, also, and you guys have always called me Rose. I'm like already being defensive about
it. No, I am not trying to start a fight. But yes, I have always called you Rose.
My siblings have always called me Rose.
Yes.
No, but the real reason, what happened was I was applying to jobs from St. Louis, once I graduated law school in St. Louis, to Nebraska, because I wanted to come back home and be close to the fam. But then I applied to a ton of jobs, both in St. Louis and in Nebraska. And I would get a ton of interviews in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And then I would apply here and I would get 0 interviews. And it was frustrating me. And so I was like, well, maybe I shouldn't go back home. Like, maybe it's telling me you should stay here in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And then I spoke to one of my mentors because I was like, is it my grades? I had like good grades. I had a good transcript from everywhere. And I had good references. I had a good resume. And I was like, what is going on? Like, why am I not getting interviews? And so my mentor, who also happens to be a person of color in the law field, told me it's likely your name. She had read already many of the studies that we now know of, like where names with that can't be easily pronounced by the Anglo community were being thrown out just for that mere fact. I had never heard that before then. And I was like, no way. Like, no way. If I just shorten my name, it'll be fine. She's like, try it. And I did. I started applying here in Nebraska with Rose Godinez. I got probably 5 interviews. All because of that. Because my name was Rose Godinez. It's ridiculous that you can't go by your full name because you won't get jobs. That didn't happen at the ACLU, though. I should clarify that. The ACLU did ask me what name I wanted to go by, and they would respect either one. And that's why I chose them. And then another reason I still go by it is I do have to talk to a lot of people, often older white men, who can't pronounce my name when they read it. I don't know how you, first of all, I don't know how you cannot just read it. Like, it's kind of just written the way you can, like, it's written how you say it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I still get like Rose Angelina, Rose Angel, the list goes on. But I also go by it still because I have to talk to a lot of white older men who, and convince them in the policy world of, or persuade them to go towards a certain policy change or a certain bill change. And I feel like instead of wasting time in teaching them how to pronounce my name, I rather get them to spend their time where I need them to, like getting protections for meatpacking plant, or, you know, like meatpacking plant workers, not meatpacking.
Just to clarify, just to make sure you all know. Yeah. But I think it's also important what you said. Your identity is Rose. You have grown up with your siblings calling you Rose. You know, like, that is such an important piece to that, you know. And but also the other side of it, understanding that your full name can be discriminated against just because somebody doesn't know how to pronounce it, or they're not willing to go the extra mile to learn. And isn't that interesting, you know? And I guess I just wanted to touch a little bit on it because I have heard so many of our women, beautiful women, that que también have gone through that. And it's the latter. It's not because my siblings called me Rose. It's because, you know, nobody can say Angelica, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So therefore I have to change my whole name. So then it's more approachable. So it is an interesting piece. And I wanted to talk about it because I think it takes courage acknowledging it and understanding your identity and understanding how much it does affect us, but also being proud of your race and your ethnicity. You know, there's so much tied to one thing in our identities. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, sister.
Well, we've talked a lot about different barriers that you have experienced and you have overcame them. Obviously, you're here. You're doing a whole bunch of awesome things at the Capitol and trying to help our immigrant communities, but also various people of color. You're front and center when they're talking about the, you know, BLM, Black Lives Matter issues. You're front and center with Native American communities. So I just want to share that you have overcome all of this and you're still here and you're still standing strong and you're still very much proud of your background. So gracias. And then I want to finish with a couple of questions in regards to courage, because it is something that if you don't have fear in it, there is no courage. So let's talk a little bit about the fear, you know, like, so can you share with me an act of courage that you may have overcome, something that brought you fear, but you overcame and did it because you knew it was necessary? Do you have any examples of that for us?
I feel like every day, because I mean, honestly, as Latinas right now in this very, very heavily racist world, it does take courage to go out and just do your job. But also, it shouldn't take courage. Like, it's like a double-edged sword. You know what I mean? Like, we shouldn't have to be courageous to just go to our job and have to confront the biases. Like, they just shouldn't exist.
Right.
But we have to be courageous to do it. So yeah, I think, like, for me, it isn't easy to do, to go in front of a bunch of senators and ask them to make a policy change for something that affects Latinos, that affects someone like me, affects me, mm-hmm. And have to explain that. And yet it seems like it goes right over their head sometimes, some senators, not all of them. And that's hard to do, especially when, you know, in the policy realm, there aren't a lot of people that are privileged enough to be at the Capitol every day to advocate against some of these bills. Like, if we weren't there, I don't even want to know what kind of bills would come out of there. But, like, fortunately, we can be there, but it also takes courage, I think, to be there and be present all the time, even though you're hearing this negative rhetoric at you all the time. And just these questions that are, I don't know how they come up with some of these questions, and have to answer those. And yeah, so I think just being a Latina in this field takes courage, but it's also something I love. So
yeah. Well, I'm super proud of you. You have grown up to be such a beautiful and powerful woman. And I know that it is not easy. I know that what you do on a constant daily basis is not easy. I stepped in your shoes for like 2 seconds con my daughter when we were doing the packing plant legislation piece. It was my first time testifying. And I lived a little bit of your experience, and I can only imagine how much it takes, you know, from you, but also how you overcome and how strong you are because you do it every day. So you're an inspiring woman, mujer.
Aw, I learned it from the best. Oh.
just take the compliment already.
I accept the compliment.
All right. Well, and then my last question. For all of the little roses out there, for all, you know, for little Rose back in middle school, back in high school, any advice for any women, you know, that want to step out of their comfort zone and do something courageous? Do you have any advice for us, you know?
Yeah. Get a mentor. It's so, so important. I think from a young age, you've already heard some of my story, and just so it was kind of hard for me to find a mentor because I didn't even know where I was going. But once I knew where I was going, I should have sought out a mentor. And the problem was, and you went through this too, like, it's so hard to find Latinos that have gone through that field that you want to go into, that you look up to or can seek out. Back when we were in college and looking out for mentors in our particular fields, there weren't that many, like, that were Latino and had the same background, had gone through the same things, the financial struggles, the just not knowing what the system was. And I actually backtracked a bit to see who was a Latina attorney at the time that I was going to law school. Mm-hmm. And there were only like 3. And I know them all now, but I didn't know them at the time.
Yeah.
And that's really sad, but the good news is nowadays there are a lot more Latina attorneys, and that's so cool. It's cool to hang out with them and just be in like camaraderie and just know all the struggles that we went through. But we also I don't want anybody else to have to go through those struggles. Like, I tripped and fell so many times on my face trying to pass that LSAT. I didn't know what the secret was. There is no secret, by the way, but there is like a way to study for it. And I didn't know that. I didn't know how to apply to law schools or financial aid or how you apply for the bar. What do you do after you pass the bar? What is the bar? So I didn't know when I went to law school that there was such a thing as an exam that I still needed to take at the end.
Oh,
I was
no.
Like, what is this?
I just got here.
Exactly. I was like, oh, I thought I graduated, give me my degree. Well, yeah. I'm a lawyer. No, you have to take this exam that's 3 days long and you have to memorize all of the law of all of these fields, no notes, and you just have to have it in your brain. So I didn't know that existed. It would have been helpful.
Surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I passed, but still, it was a struggle. So yeah, I think getting a mentor as quickly as you can. I don't think anybody right now as a Latina attorney would ever turn down like a coffee or just a short chat with someone who wants to be a lawyer. You know, like we need the diversity. We need you because there isn't enough representation and it's not good enough as it is. So reach out to me, and or if not me, there's some other amazing Latina attorneys out there. I mean, just off the top of my head, there's Cheryl Mora, James, there's Roxana Cortez out of Omaha, Jesus Tena out of Lexington. You know, I think that we have good representation now, kind of across the state. I think I even know one all the way in Scotts Bluff. So we're doing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that's very important. And I think one of the questions that a little me would say is, I don't know how to reach out to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, so how do I'm, you know, they can follow Courageous Mujer Podcast on Facebook, Insta, pero how do I follow Rose? Or how do I even find you? And how do I get your contact information and reach out to you if I were to seek a mentorship? You know, and we're not saying just that, pero... Or if I want to know a little bit about, you know, or invite you to a conversation and do another podcast. Quien sabe, you know, we don't know who's listening, but there may be a little podcaster out there wanting to find out more about you. So where do they find you, Rose? How do they track you down?
Yeah. For the peeps who want to find me, you can find me, I think like for mentorships, I think I would go through email to any attorney that you're seeking out rather than social media. And for me, like you can find it at aclunebraska.org, go to staff, and then you click on my picture and it shows you my email. Or LinkedIn is also a good way to reach out. If you don't have a LinkedIn, I suggest you have one. And it doesn't matter how young you are. I think it helps to just build out your network in the future. And then as for just like learning stuff about me or stuff that we do, you can follow me on Facebook. I go by Rosangela Godinez or Rose Godinez. I usually add all the people that have mutual friends with me. And then those are really the only main two ways you can find me.
And I appreciate the difference, right? Porque sometimes we don't know. So then being able to know, okay, if I'm going to reach out to Rose on a professional level, reach out to me on a professional level. Y luego, if you want to know a little bit about my life, then reach out to me via social media. I think that's so important because sometimes we don't know the difference. You know, sometimes we're messaging people and saying, hey, can I get a job? So that's very important lesson learned here.
You got to keep it separate. At least I try to keep it separate. For myself, that's just good for mental health, I think, you know, just keeping work at work and personal. Although that's not very good because all my Facebook is like work posts, but that's also personal.
She
the
told
work
you.
Is personal.
Yeah. I was going to say, she told you she's fighting for her rights as well. Give her a break already, you know?
We are the job. We just saw that quote.
Yeah, we did. Well, Rose, I appreciate you coming to Courageous Mujer Podcast. We welcome you again. I hope we have future conversations about how we can help other courageous mujeres in the state of Nebraska and build this community and space for them to feel embraced, supported, and celebrated. So gracias, Rose, for joining us today. Any last words that you want to share with the world?
You know, don't give up as soon as it gets hard. I think there are so many lessons in my life where it was either the roommate that made it super difficult for me in college my first year, or the LSAT taking 3 times to get into law school, or, you know what, shortening my name in order to get the job. Do what you have to do to be what you want to be and to achieve your dreams, because it's up to you and no one else.
Yes, that is inspiring. And I appreciate you again for coming onto the podcast, Courageous Mujer Podcast. We appreciate all of your comments. And don't forget, we're going to be here every 2 weeks uploading new material for you to follow. And you can find Courageous Mujer Podcast at Spotify, Apple Podcast, eAnchor. And of course, I want to let you know that this has been directed and written by Gladys Godinez and edited and produced by 1817 Media. I appreciate you. Hasta la próxima.